Peter B. Collins News and Comment, Special Edition, 10 Years After, Shock and Awe in Iraq.
Back in the days of shock and awe, we came to liberate them all. History was a cruel judge of overconfidence. Back in the days of shock.
Well, Neil, it wasn't overconfidence. It was arrogance, stupidity, and a determination that was made well before the events of 9/11 to find a pretext to invade Iraq because, as George W. Bush once said, Saddam tried to kill my daddy. I dug into the Peter B. Collins tax-deductible music and sound archives. And I want to thank Katrina Rill and the staff of people at Icicle Productions. Back in 2003, I went to work there, producing a show that was on Sirius Satellite Radio. And I'll identify where I can the source of the sound bites that you're about to hear. I've got about 17 CDs in front of me, and I'm going to try to get as much of this in as I can in the, I don't know how long this will take. I don't know how much patience you have. But I want to take you back and add some comments. As we listen to the Bush-Cheney gang that brought us this mess, and for the most part, they've never apologized, never recognized the errors of their ways, cannot bring themselves to admit that this was a huge blunder. And just recently, in the Republican CPAC gathering in Washington, Mitt Romney and others talked about the glorious war in Iraq. And it was such a debacle. And I don't need to repeat the loss of life, the trillions of dollars, some of which will be paid out over the next 50 or 60 years. The damage to America's reputation, the way it hardened Islamic nations against the United States, and the way it fulfilled the wildest dreams of Osama bin Laden. And of course, you know, I don't buy the mythology of the events of 9/11 and the narrative that has been provided. But bin Laden wanted to see America fall on its face. And we did it to ourselves. That's what's really tragic. One great source of voices in opposition to the Iraq War and to the Bush administration is a filmmaker named Robert Greenwald. He continues to do great work on the progressive side of things. But back in 2003-2004, he produced and released a documentary called Uncovered. And he brought out a lot of establishment voices, who you'll hear in a moment. Military, defense, intelligence, veterans. Not peaceniks like me or the other 9.9 million people who took to the streets in advance of this mess to register our opposition. So let's start with this clip from Uncovered by Robert Greenwald. You'll hear a series of voices, most of whom you'll recognize.
Saddam Hussein now has weapons of mass destruction.
Iraq's weapons Cheney. Of mass destruction.
A clear threat Bush. To the United States.
Right.
Dozens of ballistic missiles.
It has sponsored and sheltered terrorists.
Paying suicide
Chemical
bombers.
Weapons are equally chilling.
Biological weapons, including anthrax and botulism toxins.
Biological and chemical agent to kill millions of people.
Chemical weapons, including VX and sarin, mustard gas.
To a massive and sudden horror.
Massive death and destruction.
Death on a massive scale.
When you hear it edited that way, it kind of feels like it was scripted, doesn't it? Well, it was. Here's one of the people who read his script, and I know Colin Powell regrets what he did as Secretary of State and the presentation that was riddled with lies that he made at the United Nations in February of 2003. Here's General Powell.
Saddam Hussein has used these horrific weapons. on another country and on his own people.
Colin Powell spoke of thousands of liters of anthrax that were unaccounted for.
That's Scott Ritter.
Probably hiding it. And then he held up a little vial of white powder. And he said, a couple teaspoonfuls of white powder like this, if launched against American cities, could kill thousands of Americans. If he was truly to reflect the Iraqi capability, he would have held up a bottle of Diet Coke and said the Iraqis produced anthrax that looked like this. It has a shelf life of 3 years. The last known production batch came out in 1991, so even if Iraq was hiding this brown sludge liquid, it would be useless today.
Scott Ritter was one of the key people who I relied on to form my own opinion that Bush was lying, that there was no real threat from an Iraqi weapons program, nuclear, biological, or otherwise. And, you know, one of the most interesting conversations in retrospect that I had was with Dan Rather, the former CBS anchor, who got fired because he reported honestly about Bush's military record, or lack thereof, his failure to serve in the National Guard. And I asked Dan Rather, who had the last interview with Saddam Hussein before we invaded, if he ever thought that Saddam was telling the truth when he said he didn't have WMD. Dan Rather, even in 2006, said he wasn't sure, didn't know, and didn't seem to care. Now here's Condoleezza Rice, who was the National Security Advisor back when we invaded Iraq, and then she was put in charge of the occupation. Then she was promoted to Secretary of State. And she is a person with zero shame.
The president quoted a British paper. We did not know at the time. No one knew at the time in our circles. Maybe someone knew down in the bowels of the agency, but no one in our circles knew that there were doubts and suspicions that this might be a forgery. Of course, it was information that was mistaken.
Now, given what I knew
just
about
a mistake
where the question had originated, and given what I knew about the way the government works, I knew that people in her circle did know.
Yes, they did know. They were lying. And other reports from those who left the administration told us that they had settled on WMD as the best marketing tool for the war in Iraq, and they weren't so concerned, just like a lot of people who engage in dishonest marketing, whether the facts measured up or not. From the same film by Robert Greenwald, here's Karen Kwiatkowski, an officer in the United States Air Force who served at the Pentagon and saw how they were cooking up the intelligence, as we later learned from the Downing Street memo, to match a foregone conclusion.
Supporting the Constitution, understanding what's in the Constitution, caring about the Constitution. That's why we don't have a king, because we have a piece of paper. So I think that is patriotism.
And here comes Don this Rumsfeld and friends.
Process that takes some time, and it will ebb and flow.
One thing we know is that he had a weapons program.
I don't know anybody that I can think of who has contended that the Iraqis had nuclear weapons.
And we believe he has, in fact, reconstituted nuclear weapons.
But let's just jump in here. That was Rumsfeld saying, I didn't hear anybody say that. And then Cheney, who, of course, did say it more than once.
On the specific issue of weapons of mass destruction, it's going to take time and we're going to have to be patient.
Over time, the truth will come out.
Yeah, right. Well, we know the truth, but nobody in that administration has faced up to it and acknowledged that they lied to us. Now, that would be awfully inconvenient, wouldn't it? Two veterans of the intelligence community with whom I'm still in contact today are Mel Goodman and Ray McGovern, and they appeared in Robert Greenwald's Uncovered film, and both had very strong early responses, sharply critical of the misinformation, disinformation, and outright lies that we were fed.
Saddam has resumed his efforts to acquire nuclear weapons.
Develop nuclear weapons.
Nuclear weapons.
Here the intelligence community did a pretty good job. I think for the most part
this
they made
Goodman.
It clear that the evidence was not there to show that Iraq was trying to reconstitute its nuclear capability, let alone whether or not it had a nuclear capability.
And here comes President Bush and his comment about the growing danger with a response from Mel Goodman.
The danger to our country is grave. The danger to our country is growing.
The Bush administration made up its mind to go to war on September the 11th, 2001.
Sorry, it was before that, Mel.
From that time on, you were dealing with rationalization and justification for the war. You weren't dealing with real causes for the war or real reasons for the war. There was never a clear and present danger. There was never an imminent threat.
Very well put. Now to Rumsfeld.
The ties with Al-Qaeda was just a scare tactic to exploit the trauma, the very real trauma that the American people have felt ever since 9/11, and to associate that trauma with Iraq.
That was Ray McGovern, and here comes a comment from General Powell with a response once again from Weapons Inspector Scott Ritter.
Just a few weeks ago, we intercepted communications between two commanders in Iraq's 2nd Republican Guard Corps.
If you know anything about Iraq, they have very strict communication security procedures. So you would never have military personnel speaking in the clear over a radio about sensitive subjects.
That's Scott Ritter. And now here is a comment from Condoleezza Rice, and I can't recall who makes the response to her statement.
Saddam Hussein cavorts with terrorists.
Well, the war really had absolutely nothing to do with terrorism. There was no connection whatsoever between Iraq and the secular regime there and the religious fanatics who perpetrated 9/11.
Now, I'd like to intersperse here some of the satire music that really was a cottage industry during the Bush-Cheney era. And I have to say there are far fewer of these satirical songs that have surfaced since Barack Obama became president. So it does seem to be a lefty industry. This is one called Saddam's Regrets.
Well, it's tit for tat, but heck, you know all that. So when George number one brought in the big guns and chased me out of Kuwait, tried to set me straight, I arranged a little hit on that Texas twit. Well, it didn't quite work, I felt like a jerk, but I moved along, let bygones be gone, figured George would too, got other things to do than worry about me and my villainry. But whoever would have guessed, whoever would have thought that I'd come to regret that crooked shot? Who'd ever imagine that a vengeful son would make a presidential run? And almost sort of win, what were those folks smoking? At first I thought the guy on CNN was joking. If I'd have known you were such a swaggering baddie, I never would have tried to kill your daddy. I should have kept my weapons of mass destruction, should have used my limited powers of deduction to figure how important it would be to you to come on over here, show me a thing or two. I should have known money would be no object, that you'd get a blank check from your willing subjects without much reason or justification. For a little revenge, you'd bankrupt your nation. I wish that I'd listened to my inner voice. I wish I'd made a more sensible choice. If I'd have known that the boy was a little bit batty, I never would have tried to kill your daddy. Yeah, I never would have tried to prune that bush. If I'd have known that the shrub would come and kick my tush. If I'd have known he'd spawn such a vicious laddie, I never would have tried to kill your daddy.
No, you never should have tried to kill his daddy.
You may recall that in addition to Scott Ritter, who was an American deployed on the UN inspections team, we had a range of people. There was a guy named David Kaye, and there was Hans Blix, who headed up the UN inspection regime. And an Icicle reporter named Roberto Walton caught up with him when he gave a speech at UC Berkeley. I don't have the actual date, but I peg it to sometime in 2004.
Hans Blix spoke Wednesday at UC Berkeley, where he addressed criticism of the weapons inspection program he had led in Iraq and dealt out some criticism of his own.
700 inspections, and in no case did we find any weapons of mass destruction. And what was more significant was that we went to quite a number, dozens of places which had sites which had been given to us by intelligence. Since there weren't any weapons of mass destruction, we wouldn't have found any weapons of mass destruction in these sites.
While Dr. Blix believes that the war violated international law, he did see some good as a result of the war.
The great gain is that Saddam Hussein and his bloody regime is out, and that is a very, very significant gain. But he was not, I think everybody now understands, he was not a threat to his neighbors.
Nor was he a threat to the world, said Dr. Blix. Dr. Blix also said that there were grave flaws in U.S. and U.K. intelligence, but they may not have been intentional.
I have never said that either Bush or Blair or any of these people, that they were in bad faith. I have no evidence.
He's a diplomat, after all.
I think it's more, to me, more likely that they were so convinced that they were inclined to buy evidence that was not sufficiently strong.
So does Dr. Blix feel vindicated?
Yes, I think that what we said, independent international inspectors responding to the Security Council came much closer to reality than intelligence agencies in the countries that waged the war.
Dr. Blix says he was once told that he needed to go to an eye doctor if he could not see a smoking gun. To this, Dr. Blix responded that his doctor does not prescribe tinted glasses. For All American Talk Radio, I'm Roberto Walton.
And as we said, that's an interview or a report on a statement given by Hans Blix. He was way too generous, in my view, to the Bush administration, saying they were mistaken, but not intentionally misleading, and I certainly don't accept that notion. Now, I scrubbed through my files, and I did not find excerpts from Colin Powell's presentation to the United Nations just weeks before our invasion. And keep in mind that Bush had promised when he got the authorization to go to war from Congress in October of 2002 that he would only do it with UN approval. And then he never sought UN approval. He did send Colin Powell to give a speech, and Powell struggled with it. He was given intelligence and apparently weeded out some of the things that he thought were flagrantly wrong. But he did include, most notably, the inaccurate and false testimony that had come through torture of suspects about a guy named Curveball, who had revealed the alleged mobile weapons labs of the government of Iraq. They were non-existent. But Powell made that presentation. And this recording, I believe, is from about 2004, and it may have been from a testimony before Congress. But this is Colin Powell spinning up the threat posed by Iraq.
Capability comes in many forms. Do you have the intellectual ability? Do you have the people who can make these kinds of weapons? The answer is yes, he did. He had the people. Second level is, did he have the infrastructure, the wherewithal? Yes, he did. There is no question in the intelligence community. Dr. K confirms it. Other intelligence agencies and other nations confirm it. The UN confirmed it over a period of years of investigation. President Clinton's experts and his analyses that he went through led him to believe that this capability was there. The infrastructure, the knowledge, know-how, people who could do it. Did he have factories that could be of a dual-use nature that could produce this kind of material? Yes, he did. Did he have just-in-time capability, and was he developing? Yes, he was. The one question that there is a dispute about is, what was the stockpile level that might be there or not be there? I can assure you that as we went through this analysis and we looked at all these levels of capability, when it came to stockpiles, the preponderance of all information available to us, available to our many intelligence agencies, available to British intelligence and intelligence agencies of other nations, made it clear that the correct answer was yes, he had such weapons, he had such stockpiles.
Well, that is an incredible spin job. And by trying to say, well, everybody else thought just like we did, well, they were pressured into agreeing with us. We used every means available, including using spies at the United Nations to try to figure out the strategies of other countries and whether they were going to fall in line with the coalition of the billing or not. And here, from a news conference in October of 2003, keep in mind we invaded in March. We didn't find Saddam Hussein until December. And here is Bush trying to explain just Well, the progress in Iraq and how the world is safer without Saddam Hussein running it.
Liberating the people of those nations from dictatorial regimes was an essential step in the war on terror. And the world is safer today because Saddam Hussein and the Taliban are gone. We're now working with many nations to make sure Afghanistan and Iraq are never again a source of terror and danger for the rest of the world.
Well, I wish that were true. The president goes on to say here, and this again is just about 6 months after we had invaded, how much better things were and just how Iraq was getting right back on track. Little did he know that we would still be in Iraq at the end of his second term.
In recent weeks, you and your White House team have made a concerted effort to put a positive spin on progress in Iraq. And at the same time, there's been a much more somber assessment in private, as with Secretary Rumsfeld's memo. And there are people out there who don't believe that the administration is leveling with them about the difficulty and scope of the problem in Iraq.
Yeah, I can't put it any more plainly. Iraq's a dangerous place. That's leveling. It is a dangerous place. What I was saying is there's more than just terrorist attacks that are taking place in Iraq. There are schools opening. There are hospitals opening. The electricity, the capacity to deliver electricity to Iraqi people is back up to pre-war levels. We're nearly 2 million barrels of oil a day being produced for the Iraqi people. So I was just saying, we've got to look at the whole picture. That what the terrorists would like is for people to focus only on the conditions which create fear, and that is the death and the toll being taken.
Wow. I mean, that's really breathtaking. To hear him lie and try to pretend that things were so close to better in Iraq, and sure, he said it was a dangerous place, but he offset that with a whole pack of bullshit. Now, I don't know about you, but my bullshit detector was pegging as I listened to that. Now we go to the president's comments. I believe these are at the United Nations in September of 2003, as he once again makes the case that the United States made the right move to invade Iraq.
Between these alternatives, there is no neutral ground. All governments that support terror are complicit in a war against civilization.
With us or against us?
No government should ignore the threat of terror, because to look the other way gives terrorists the chance to regroup and recruit and prepare. And all nations that fight terror, as if the lives of their own people depend on it, will earn the favorable judgment of history.
Well, I don't know if David Frum wrote that speech. He was one of the chief speechwriters for Bush. But it's a detachment from reality and the implied threats there that, if you're not with us, then somehow you could be our next enemy. Those comments were not lost on many of the people who were in the audience, either at the UN or around the world. Now we go to what, again, I believe is in late 2003 or 2004, because despite the promises, no WMD had turned up. Bush finally relented and agreed to appoint a friendly commission to take a look at whatever happened to those pesky WMDs.
Today, by executive order, I am creating an independent commission chaired by Governor and former Senator Chuck Robb, Judge Lawrence Silberman, to look at American intelligence capabilities, especially our intelligence about weapons of mass destruction. Last week, our former chief weapons inspector, David Kay, reported that Saddam Hussein's regime had weapons programs and activities in violation of United Nations Security Council resolutions and was a gathering threat to the world. Dr. Kay also stated that some pre-war intelligence assessments by America and other nations about Iraq's weapon stockpiles have not been confirmed. We're determined to figure out why. In naming this commission, these men as co-chairman of the commission, I'm also naming today Senator John McCain,
Lloyd Cutler, former White House counsel to Presidents Carter and Clinton, Rick Levin, the president of Yale University, Admiral Bill Studeman, the former deputy director of the Central Intelligence Agency, Judge Pat Wald, a former judge on the D.C. Court of Appeals. Those are seven members named. The commission calls for up to 9 members. As we vet and find additional members to fill out the 9, we will let you know. Thank you for your attention.
Yeah, they had to go scrub and find people who were compliant enough and who were part of the intelligence establishment who wouldn't spill anything. And, of course, this was just the first of a series of efforts to whitewash the failures that led us into Iraq. And one of the biggest ones was the claim that there was somehow a connection between Saddam Hussein and al-Qaeda. Dick Cheney pushed this one really hard about a meeting that Mohammed Atta reportedly had in the Czech Republic with an emissary from Baghdad. And it was a flat-out lie. And anybody who knew the dynamics knew that a Sunni like Saddam Hussein could have no meaningful relationship with a Shiite like Osama bin Laden. And they hated each other. They didn't have any use for one another. And we know clearly that they were never allies in any way, shape, or form. And here, finally, Bush admits that there was no connection between Saddam Hussein and 9/11.
We've had no evidence that Saddam Hussein was involved with the September the 11th. Now, what the vice president said was is that he has been involved with al-Qaeda. And al-Zarqawi, al-Qaeda operative, was in Baghdad. He's the guy that ordered the killing of a U.S. diplomat.
Zarqawi surfaced much later and really had no connection to 9/11. He was one of those people who was a late joiner of al-Qaeda franchises and was ultimately killed in Iraq in about 2005 or 2006. Time for another little ditty from the era. This one is a takeoff on the old blues tune, Tell Mama. Well, this song clearly was produced sometime in late 2004 or 2005 because it references the locating of Saddam Hussein hiding in a hole. And it also references the mission accomplished staged event on the USS, I think it was the Abraham Lincoln, off the coast of San Diego, staged with perfect optics, the codpiece in Bush's crotch. He flew in as the co-pilot of a plane that landed on the carrier, and then he gave a speech about how the major conflict had ended in Iraq and that the U.S. had prevailed. And, of course, those were words that he would regret and, if he had any regrets, would still regret today. So let's listen to a news conference that Bush held just 2 days after we learned the location and capture of Saddam Hussein. And here's how he was playing that moment of victory.
He will be detained. We will work with the Iraqis to develop a way to try him that will stand international scrutiny, I guess is the best way to put it. I shared my sentiments today with Prime Minister Martin of Canada. He asked me about Saddam Hussein and his trial. I said, look, the Iraqis need to be very much involved. He was the person that, they were the people that were brutalized by this man. He murdered them, he gassed them, he tortured them, he had rape rooms. And they need to be very much involved in the process. And we'll work with the Iraqis to develop a process. And of course we want it to be fair. Of course, we want the world to say, "Well, this, you know, we got a fair trial," because whatever justice is meted out needs to stand international scrutiny. I've got my own personal views of how he ought to be treated, but I'm not an Iraqi citizen. It's going to be up to the Iraqis to make those decisions.
Now, this is a flat-out lie, because of course the show trial that was created was nominally run by Iraqis, and there was an Iraqi judge. If I recall correctly, one of them was killed or nearly killed in the process. But this was completely a puppet show controlled by Paul Bremer, the guy who had been loaned by Kissinger and Associates to the Bush administration to run the occupation of Iraq. And so to claim that this was going to be a fair trial, just about as fair as the kangaroo courts at Guantanamo Bay, Cuba.
I believe, firmly believe, and you've heard me say this a lot, and I say it a lot because I truly believe it, that freedom is the Almighty God's gift to every person, every man and woman who lives in this world. That's what I believe. And the arrest of Saddam Hussein changed the equation in Iraq. Justice was being delivered to a man who defied that gift from the Almighty to the people of Iraq.
One of the things that I recall commenting on at the time is the way that Bush Sr. and George W. Bush both chose to create demons. Kind of the equivalent of supervillains in comic book movies. And with Bush Sr., it was Saddam Hussein and Manuel Noriega, the strong man in Panama. And with W., he returned to identify both Osama bin Laden and Saddam Hussein as the two greatest evildoers on our planet. And I don't know if it's something that just appealed to the Bush family as a way of personalizing these things, or if it was part of the psychological operations. But it was one of the methods that they used to try to get the American people to focus hate and nationalism against a specific individual, and it probably served them well. Here's something I found amusing when I just re-listened to it today. You'll hear George W. Bush talk about health care and how much they're spending, but not on Americans.
It was reminding me, I think the budget of the Saddam Hussein's government for health was like $16 million, less than a dollar per person. And, of course, we're spending a lot more than that now on health care in Iraq.
Yeah, right, W. So when you hear the kind of spin, the rationalizations that Bush and his cronies uttered, the guy who really takes the cake is Mr. Slam Dunk himself, George Tenet, who served up the intelligence kind of like Bush was going through the drive-through window at Wendy's or Burger King, and said, "You want some WMD on that? Hey, Mr. President, it's a slam dunk." Now, this is from about 2004. Tenet was still running the CIA. And here is his spin, looking back on those pesky missing weapons of mass destruction.
National estimates are publications where the intelligence community seeks to sum up what we know about a subject, what we don't know, what we suspect may be happening, and where we differ on key issues. This estimate asked if Iraq had chemical, biological, and nuclear weapons and the means to deliver them. We concluded that in some of these categories, Iraq had weapons, and that in others where it did not have them, it was trying to develop them. Let me be clear. Analysts differed on several important aspects of these programs, and those debates were spelled out in the estimate. They never said there was an imminent threat. Rather, they painted an objective assessment for our policymakers of a brutal dictator who was continuing his efforts to deceive and build programs that might constantly surprise us and threaten our interests. No one told us what to say or how to say it.
No, they didn't have to.
History has been kind to Winston Churchill, as it usually is to those who help save the world. In a decade of political exile during the 1930s, Churchill was dismissed as a nuisance when the crisis he predicted arrived. Nearly everyone knew that only one man could rescue Britain. The same trait that had made him an outcast eventually made him the leader of his country.
So this is Bush hoping that he could be the next Churchill and that history would change its opinion of him the way it changed its opinion of Winston Churchill. No such luck so far, Mr. President. No, and you've got this John Fogerty song to live down. Fogerty, of course, was the lead singer of Creedence, and he really let it rip when he released this in about 2005.
I can't take it no more.
One memorable episode involved Ray McGovern, who I mentioned earlier, former CIA analyst who remains a friend and a contributor to this program. And he was able to confront Don Rumsfeld. I believe the event was in Atlanta. And it was open to the public. And Ray McGovern didn't break any rules. He was called upon. He asked a question and he said, Mr. Rumsfeld, you told us that you would find the WMD, and you made a statement that they're either north, south, east, or west of Baghdad. And Rumsfeld wasn't required to answer that question that day because his security people hustled Ray McGovern out of that meeting. And here, in his own words, Don Rumsfeld tries to spin up the fact that they just couldn't find those damn WMD.
Think it took us 10 months to find Saddam Hussein. The reality is that the hole he was found hiding in was large enough to hold enough biological weapons to kill thousands of human beings.
Yeah, the only problem is, Donnie, there weren't any. It was a hole big enough to fill up with all of your bullshit, too, but we didn't find any of that there.
Our people had gone past that farm several times, had no idea he was there. And unlike Saddam Hussein, such objects, once buried, can stay buried. In a country the size of California, the chances of inspectors finding something buried in the ground without their being led to it by people knowledgeable about where it was is minimal. As Dr. K has testified, what we have learned thus far has not proven Saddam Hussein had what intelligence indicated and what we believe he had. But it also has not proven the opposite.
That is denial at work. And I guess it worked for Don Rumsfeld until he was sacked by George W. Bush over the objections of Dick Cheney right after the midterm elections in 2006. Now, here is one of the most bizarre statements from Bush. And this is from his State of the Union address in January of 2004, where he was still trying to hold on to the fiction that Saddam Hussein, even if we couldn't find the weapons of mass destruction, he had weapons of mass destruction-related program activities, a phrase that means absolutely nothing. Let's listen.
Some in this chamber in our country did not support the liberation of Iraq. Objections to war often come from principled motives. But let us be candid about the consequences of leaving Saddam Hussein in power. We're seeking all the facts. Already, the Kay report identified dozens of weapons of mass destruction-related program activities and significant amounts of equipment that Iraq concealed from the United Nations.
So this was his attempt to find a phrase that was similar to what he and his colleagues had used to drive us into this unnecessary war. And even that late in the game, he was trying to rationalize it and serve up an Orwellian phrase that somehow would cause the people who had believed him to continue to believe him. Now, here's a little gem from the election campaign of 2004, and I'm not sure where this came from.
George W. Bush has failed America. In 2001, President Bush used the horrible events of September 11th to push through an agenda serving his neoconservative masters no matter what the cost. The result has been the biggest debt in the nation's history and the greatest alienation of the U.S. from its allies since the Revolutionary War. To make matters worse, George W. Bush is a flatulent, arrogant pussbag, a lying sack of horse and an ass-faced ignorant. Next November, save America from another 4 years of a president with the total combined intelligence of a wet sock and a mud brick. Don't be a vote Democrat in 2004.
Yeah, we had a gallows sense of humor during those days. And I think some of us still sport it in some form. One of the things I was a little surprised by was when I heard this particular clip from Al Gore, the guy who won the election in 2000 but didn't get to become president. And he was pretty silent. Really, I was disappointed that he kept so quiet during the early days of the invasion and occupation of Iraq. And I would date this to the campaign sometime in 2004 when Al Gore came out of, he put his silence behind him. And this is a pretty rip-roaring comment from the former senator from Tennessee.
I think there were millions just like me who genuinely, in spite of whatever partisanship they may have felt prior to that time, genuinely felt like they wanted George W. Bush to lead all of us in America wisely and well. And the reason I'm recalling those feelings now is because those are the feelings that were betrayed by this president. He betrayed this country. He played on our fears.
And in about the same time frame, here's John Kerry, who became the Democratic candidate for president, ran a very lame campaign. He should have been able to take Bush out. Howard Dean had set the stage for him by leading Democrats in opposition to Bush and the war. And as usual, the windbag John Kerry was not nearly as passionate as others.
He told America that Iraq had chemical weapons 2 months after his own Defense Intelligence Agency told him there was, quote, no reliable information on whether Iraq is producing and stockpiling chemical weapons.
Well, I feel the same way about John Kerry today. I got one more set of sound bites for you, but this is one of my favorite spoof songs from back in the era. It was written and performed by Yikes McGee, a folky guy from Baltimore.
We got a president so bad, gotta be the worst we ever had. Got the job 'cause of his dad, now we're all in danger. He come around up to no good, broke the old treaties cause he could. Struts all around like a hood, got us in a world of trouble. Put him in a straitjacket, there's no doubt. Let the psychiatrist figure him out. Listen while the demonstrators cheer and shout. We'll all feel better in the morning. Compassionate conservative, my ass, in executions unsurpassed, surplus gone so fast, divided, not united. What's he wanna do now? What's he gonna try? Does he really think Armageddon is nigh? Does he care if children die? La 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 la. Put him in a straitjacket, there's no doubt. Let the psychiatrist figure him out. Listen while the demonstrators cheer and shout. We'll all feel better in the morning. We'll all feel better in the morning.
Well, yikes, I'm still waiting to feel better in the morning about endless war. Launched by Bush, propelled by Obama. Back in April of 2004, as the Democratic primary continued, Bush was trying to march toward re-election that November. At a news conference in the White House, he was asked if he had made any mistakes since he became president. Listen, because this is the kind of humility that's just priceless.
I'm sure historians will look back and say, gosh, he could have done it better this way or that way. You know, I just, I'm sure something will pop in my head here in the midst of this press conference, all the pressure of trying to come up with an answer, but it hadn't yet. I would have gone into Afghanistan the way we went in Afghanistan. Even though what I know today about the stockpiles of weapons, I still would have called upon the world to deal with Saddam Hussein.
So that was his moment of introspection. Wow. As you know, I have given heavy coverage to the 9/11 Commission, which Bush opposed as hard as he could. Then when forced by the survivors' families to do something, he insulted us all by saying, let's put Henry Kissinger in charge of the Whitewash Commission. When that didn't fly, he turned to Tom Kaine, the former governor of New Jersey, and Lee Hamilton, a reliable insider, former congressman from Indiana, and they took up the charge.
It's a good chance for both of us to answer questions that the 9/11 Commission is looking forward to asking us, and I'm looking forward to answering them.
Just let me correct myself. What he's referring to there is that they finally got Bush and Cheney to sit down with Kaine and Hamilton, but there was no record made of the conversation. It was not under oath, and it was a completely pointless exercise because, of course, Bush and Cheney, they were above it all.
See, I happen to believe that we'll find out the truth on the weapons. That's why we sent up the independent commission. I look forward to hearing the truth, exactly where they are. They could still be there. They could be hidden like the 50 tons of mustard gas in a turkey farm. One of the things that Charlie Dulford talked about was that he was surprised at the level of intimidation he found amongst people who should know about weapons and their fear of talking about them because they don't want to be killed. You know, there's a terror still in the soul of some of the people in Iraq that they're worried about getting killed and therefore they're not going to talk. But it'll all settle out. John, we'll find out the truth about the weapons at some point in time. However, the fact that he had the capacity to make them bothers me today, just like it would have bothered me then.
So, 13 months after the invasion, Bush was still clinging to the very clear falsehood that Saddam Hussein had weapons of mass destruction. Well, this is hardly a complete recap of the events. It's somewhat selective. It's based on the soundbite files that I still have on hand. But I hope you found it instructive, and I hope that people who listen to this will remember. And we're now about to be misled into a war against Iran, and we've got to resist. We have to fight. As I close today, we'll give Roy Rogers some time off. I want to give credit to Tony Wiseguy. He mailed me this CD in, I think, 2004. And he took the old Monkees theme song and rewrote it. It's called We're the Republicans.
Here we go, starting another war. We got our heads up our asses. You know, we're really bored. Hey, hey, we're the Republicans. And people say we act like clowns. We love natural disasters. Did somebody really drown? We lie whenever we want to. Yeah, you know it's true. And if you don't believe us, turn on the nightly news. Hey, hey, we're the Republicans. And people say we act like clowns. We just steal elections, run the country into the ground. We're just trying to be greedy. Our names are Bush, Cheney, and DeLay. We just passed a new bill recently. It's for people with no brains. Oh. Any city or any state, here comes Big Brother, an eminent domain. People say we act like clowns. We love natural disasters. Did somebody really drown? Two terms. And people say we act like clowns. We just steal elections, run the country into the ground. We're just trying.